21 minutes ago, I realized I was talking to myself, talking into my telephone with nobody listening. Yeah, I was in the middle of the day three call, talking to you guys, the members of this 8 Days of Change group, and then I heard that recording. If you'd like to make a call, please hang up. So, here I am now, standing upstairs, in my upstairs office, overlooking the water in my home. The water's not in my home. I'm in my home, overlooking the water outside, and I'm going to do the best that I can to replicate the material that I intended to share on the remainder of the call. As a matter of fact, I'm going to try to replicate the entire call, at least in terms of the information I share. And I started out by talking about effortless prosperity. Now, of course, what you're not going to get here is the interaction. If you would like to interact with me, you can just talk and pretend that I'm hearing you as well. Effortless prosperity. I asked you guys to think about that term, and the question was, does it really exist? Is it really possible to achieve? And I know if you watch the infomercials on Saturday morning or Sunday morning or late at night, you're going to see a lot of them for ways to make money. And they show people holding up big checks or people who just learned how to buy real estate with no money down. And they're all bragging to some degree about having achieved effortless prosperity. So, does it exist? And the feedback was, no, not really. While emotionally people can be pulled or lured into this idea that effortless prosperity is possible and perhaps possible for them, according to the sensibilities within this group, the consensus seems to be you've got to work if you want to get prosperity. So my intention now is to give you a little bit of a different perspective. Effortless prosperity. Think about the term. Effortless sounds like there is absolutely zero output in terms of energy. And immediately when we try to consider that possibility rationally, we decide it can't be. I mean, many people have tried to just get riches and get wealth and it hasn't shown up. So to help you understand the concept the way I intend it, I shared, and I'll share again, a brief story of when I was 15 years old with my first weight set that was given to me as a 15-year-old birthday gift from my Uncle Marty. It was a 110-pound weight set. And it was the old weight set where you had the bar and you would screw on the collars and you had a little kind of wrench to screw on the screws that would eventually get very worn down. And the plates weren't really plates at all. They were concrete housed inside plastic. And for me, it was the greatest weight set I had ever used. And it was also a weight set that really changed my life by connecting me with this fitness thing. One day, my friend Lloyd happened to come by and he had a bench. It was a bench that his dad had stored in the garage, and it wasn't doing any good in the garage. He said, you know what? I'm going to bring this over, and once a week, we'll have a bench day where we'll all go to Phil's house, and we'll lift weights, and we'll see how much we can bench press. And it became a sort of a ritual. But for me, it really became just a part of my weight training routine. So on bench day, Lloyd and Manny and sometimes some other guys would come over, and we would bench press. We would do about 20 sets. We'd just keep benching and spotting each other and yelling at each other and trying to do more weight. Well, on this one particular day, nobody came for bench day, except for me. After all, it was my house. And I was home by myself. My mother wasn't home. My dad was at work. And I loaded up the bar, right? Just as I would do if Lloyd was there and Manny was there and Bosick was there and all the other guys who would sometimes come over to lift weights. Put on lots of weight, at least relative to my 15-year-old very frail physique at the time. And I got 8 reps pretty easily. And then I went for 9, and I got 9 pretty easily. I was heading for 12, but by the time I made it to 11, I realized not only am I good for 12, I can keep going. So I was struggling a bit, but it was feeling good. I got 13, and now I'm pushing up 14, and I come down for rep number 15, and I get about halfway up, and it stops right about there. Now, I'm feeling the burn, you know, so that weird part of me goes, yeah, this is good. But then another part of me starts to go, Phil, the bar's not moving, and this is a little scary. And then gravity teamed up with the bar, and it started coming back down. So there I am, trying to now push what feels like solid granite off of my chest, and I'm pinned, literally pinned, to the bench. And I started getting scared. I got an adrenaline rush, and my heart starts pounding, and I tried to roll the bar down to my waist so then I would just be able to sit up. But by the time it made it just to the bottom of my rib cage, I realized this isn't going to work because I can't breathe. So I rolled it back onto my chest. And then I had the great idea that I was going to just kind of tip it over a little bit and let the weights fall. But those weights were screwed on. The collar was screwed on really good. And the whole bench started to tip. And I said, no, this is not a good idea. I'll probably go crashing through the floor and into the apartment below. Well, just as I'm pretty close to panic, I hear a key in the door, and it's my mother. And I scream, "Mom!" And she comes running in, and she was carrying some kind of bags. She was shopping for something. She dropped the bags, and instead of initially coming to help me, she starts pacing. She doesn't know what to do. And she's going, "Oh, my God, I knew Marty shouldn't have brought you that weight set. Oh, my God." And I'm trying to stay calm. I said, Mom, come here, come here. Just put your hands on the bar. She put her hands on the bar, and I said, "I'm going to count to three, and then together, I'm going to push, you're going to pull. Ready? Here we go. 1, 2, 3. And we returned the bar to the rack, and I'm alive. And if you ran into my mother today and asked her about what happened in the apartment that day, she will tell you that I was pinned under 500 pounds and she rushed in at the last minute, saved my life, lifted it up, just like the mother who lifts the truck off of the child. You've heard that story. She believes that to this day. So I'll go with it, 500 pounds. The truth is, between you and me, and don't tell my mother, it was 80 pounds. I was a skinny 15-year-old kid struggling to get 15 repetitions with 80 pounds. Now, 30 years later, I'm in my 40s. And I went through the period of time in my 20s and maybe into my 30s where you start to get into that how much can you bench mentality and you go for the single rep at times. I don't go near that anymore. In my 40s, my joints say, "Phil, you don't mess with that kind of stuff." But I will tell you this. If I needed to, I could right now get on an Olympic bench and push out 315 for 5 reps. And if I were about to do that, I would start with a warm-up. I'd warm up with a very lightweight, and then I would put 135 pounds, right, two 45-pound plates. You guys know what I'm talking about. And I would crank out, 12 or 15 reps, and I'd start going up to 315. Now think about it. 80 pounds. That's how much I got pinned by when I was 15. Today, I do a warm-up with 135 pounds. So if you gave me an 80-pound bar and asked me to do 15 repetitions, it would feel effortless. Now, it wouldn't actually be effortless. There would be energy output. But compared to the challenge that would now be characteristic, it would feel effortless. It would not even summon up the sensation of effort. So by that token, is there such a thing as effortless prosperity? You'll find as you go through the 8 days get progressively harder. But amazingly, the directives will begin to feel easier. I call that the beginning of effortless prosperity. Now, day 2 for some of you had your stomach tied in knots because I asked you to ask your clients for more money. And asking clients for more money is so difficult right now because it is an uncharacteristic challenge. You're not used to that. And the willingness to be as introspective and honest as I asked you to consider your ego, that's hard if you've never done it before. Very much like benching 80 pounds for reps may be for a 15-year-old. But then the day comes that you look back and you find the effort laughable. On the call today, I asked you to think about a gymnast or a competitive skier. And I said, when you watch the performance, doesn't it appear effortless? But an immense amount of energy output was required for the performance. I'm not even talking about the practice part of it. I'm talking about the performance that you witnessed that appeared effortless. An incredible amount of energy output was required. Now, when you see the skier, it's very easy to go, well, he can do that because he's so talented. In the Be Better program, we do a complete and thorough exploration of the concept of talent. And the bottom line is this: exceptional performance comes from high energy output. When you get better at a task through repetition or through practice, or when you create an internal emotional shift that moves barriers out of the way, the task becomes intuitive. So the energy output still exists, but the sensation of effort is reduced. In other words, hard work is a key to effortless prosperity. Effortless prosperity is a sensation rather than a literal state of being. It is a sensation that you deserve to experience. It is a sensation that you have the ability to create, and it is the intention of this program. Effortless prosperity is not the same thing as making $1 million overnight, nor is it the instant arrival of wealth. It is strategic and progressive work that allows you to get better at those things that once felt challenging. On the call today, I asked some of you to share your thoughts about some of the products or some of the offers or some of the services that are marketed as if weight loss or fitness will be effortless. And what was common in your sentiments was a combination of anger and a little bit of envy, because you're looking at these people who are making a fortune ripping people off, and you're realizing that you actually have the power to deliver the result people want, and you're not making that fortune. So we can look at what exists, and we could say there's a lot of money being made at the expense of people, and it angers us. And I believe rightly so. But here's what I learned, and here's what I wanted to share on the call. Some of the people behind the promises are absolutely criminals, and they deserve to be locked up forever. Okay, my opinion. And some of them are very simply hardworking opportunists who maybe they're doing something wrong by our standards, but they certainly are not committing crimes and they don't deserve to be locked up. And that's when I decided to tell you about Martin Joseph. Martin Joseph grew up and lives presently outside of Youngstown, Ohio. And he's always been a very hardworking guy. You could not take that away from him. He drove an 8-year-old Chevy when I met him. He lived in a nice home in a very modest neighborhood. And when I first met him, I met him because he had heard me on a radio interview up in his part of the country. And then after a few telephone calls to my office, he decided to come down to Florida and spend a month so he can get in shape. Now, when I came to know him, I also came to know that he had over $7 million in the bank and he had earned every penny of it. What was interesting about Martin is he didn't look like a millionaire. I mean, he looked ordinary. He looked very ordinary. In fact, if I gave you a lineup of people and Martin was standing in that lineup and I said, which one is the millionaire? He probably would have been the last one that you would pick. Martin worked with me for a month. He was thrilled with the outcome. And then he went back home and he called me a few months later. He said, Phil, I want you to come up here. I would like you to help me design a gym so I can continue everything you taught me in my home. And I would also like you to help me reorganize my kitchen and just make some better choices so that the lifestyle that I want to live becomes simpler. So I went and I visited Martin at his home and I helped him build a gym. And at that point, I really came to know him. And as I was getting to know him, I really questioned whether I thought he was an unethical scam artist or a very good business person just doing what he learned to do. And I wasn't sure. So I intended on the call to give you some of the background so that you can share your opinion. What do you think? I'm going to tell you a little bit more about Martin and you decide. Is he a criminal? Is he really an unethical scam guy? Or is he just a business guy and a good guy at that? Before Martin made his first million, he was a vacuum cleaner salesperson and he had no money in the bank. I mean, he would make money and it would go toward his bills. And some of you can relate to that still. He decided he was going to leave the vacuum cleaner sales field and go into a trade, and he became an apprentice carpenter. And as a carpenter, at that time, he got married, and he started to mature, and he developed a very strong work ethic. He supported himself, he supported his wife, and then they had a daughter, and he supported now his family. And then something happened. He was called upon to build some cabinets for a millionaire in Ohio who made his money selling weight loss products through ads in the tabloids, primarily the National Enquirer. So Martin went to this guy's house to build some cabinets, and it was a mansion in Martin's estimation, and it wasn't just a few cabinets, it was extensive cabinetry. It was a major project, and he was very impressed not only by the home, but by this man. So they would chat, and they became friendly, and he ended up spending the next 2 years working for this man, not doing cabinetry, but running ads and counting money and running more ads, selling weight loss products. Now, keep in mind, Martin didn't have any background in weight loss. He was not trained in weight loss. He was an apprentice carpenter who met a guy, and he perceived this guy accurately as a millionaire who made his money in weight loss, and this guy became his mentor. So he didn't even consider that he might be doing anything wrong. The world that he was experiencing at that time was what he believed to be the entirety of the weight loss business. Now, after really doing a good job for this guy and really learning the craft or the skills required to make money in that way, Martin was invited to become the on-site manager of the fulfillment house that shipped their products. And their product line became so extensive and their inventory became so extensive that they were the primary client for this fulfillment house. Martin became the manager. So he then learned to manage people who are on the telephones and take orders and the shipping of products. And now he really became an expert in that business. A year later, Martin decided it was time for him to go off on his own. He left his employ on very good terms, and he started his first independent venture. He sold a weight loss cream that promised to reduce cellulite. And he made not only $1 million, but a few million, legitimately, by himself. He then found another product, because that's what he learned. You find a product that works, you keep it in motion, then you get another product. So then he started selling weight loss tabs, which were really caffeine tablets, and he became a legitimate 100% bona fide millionaire. In coming to know him, what I really appreciate about Martin is he could have run out and bought himself a Ferrari, or he could have bought a Porsche, or he could have bought a yacht. He didn't. He lived his same life. He did a few things. He created an add-on for his house. He bought a new Ford truck, and he paid for his daughter to go to college. So money didn't go to his head. He didn't become obsessed with money. And he has since made direct marketing money, not only by selling weight loss products, but he expanded. He sells dog training programs, a screwdriver set, and then assorted weight loss products. So is Martin a bad guy? I have to say no. See, Martin never met a customer. We're personal trainers. We know our customers firsthand. So we would assume that he knows what he's doing because we know we have that reference point of our clients' opinions. He doesn't have that. He never cared to meet a customer. It was never important to him in his line of work. It's not that he was neglecting them. Keep in mind, he learned to do this from somebody who was making millions of dollars, and he just followed what he learned. So his job was running ads, getting checks out of the mailbox, and sooner or later, he didn't even have to go to the mailbox. It was just running ads and doing things on the internet and having money change hands electronically. And then the only remaining part of his job was to find new products the customers would buy. So Martin saw products as money. He didn't distinguish between a dog training product and a weight loss pill or a cellulite cream. He didn't feel a sense of responsibility to explore the products he was selling beyond answering the questions, is it safe and will people buy it? That's all he needed to know. He's doing what he learned to do. He's finding prosperity. And in doing that, he's a good guy. He's a contributor to his family, takes care of his family, takes care of his community, gives a lot of money back. And in growing his business the way he has, he contributes to the economy. Martin is not one good guy who's stepped into this field. Martin is one of thousands. Realize that he's not sitting in some slimy back office somewhere scheming an illegal plot to con people. He's running a business in line with every mandate and every legality established by his city, state, and the federal government. He doesn't feel a need to lie. He's honest about what he does for a living. And there's now one stress in his life that he didn't have before he met me. See, I taught him the truth about weight loss. And now, for the first time ever, he's conflicted. Now he feels like maybe there's something wrong ethically with what he's doing, and he struggles with that. So he wants to get away from selling the weight loss stuff. He's wanted to sell my programs for years, but I'm not comfortable with it for many reasons. And it's really not because of him. It's because of the machine that he's created. It, again, doesn't gel with my ethics. But I don't believe Martin to be a bad guy. As a matter of fact, I believe him to be a good guy. Now, even though I frown on the widespread deception that Martin earns his living from, he hasn't any bad intentions. You can't call the police on a guy like him. You can't get the FTC on a guy like him. Now, I've met the frauds. I've met the bad people, too. I've met the fat guy who sells weight loss chromium products on the radio. Now, he's a big, honestly, I mean, I don't like to call people fat. This is a big, fat guy. And on the radio, he sounds very thin and fit. He's selling weight loss chromium pills. I've met some people who made a fortune selling what they claim is some Eastern medicinal process, and it requires an investment of $12,000. Here's their promise. It will replace the cancer cells in your body with new healthy cells. Now, there's somebody who deserves to be locked up. And I mentioned to you on a previous call my $250,000 debt. That came from a relationship with a company that absolutely knew they were ripping people off. I didn't know it when I connected with them, but I came to learn it. They had claims from attorney generals in 48 states before they went bankrupt. As a part of procedure, they would teach their telephone people to lie in order to get the sale. So, unlike Martin, I believe the owner of that company was a bad guy. I've been to QVC. I've sold product on QVC. I see firsthand the way the products are moved on QVC and Home Shopping Network. I saw the mix of just doing business and turning a blind eye to the sale of products that will not deliver the promised result. I even worked with Time Warner for a while, and while I'll say they were the best of the direct marketing companies who target a weight loss wanting audience, my ethics and their ethics were from completely different planets. On the call today, I told you about some of the products and the offers that consumers would bring me. They'd hear me on the radio and they'd hear me talk about some things and they would send me products. They would come to a seminar and bring me a product. They'd want to know, you know, Phil, is this legit or does this work? Or sometimes they knew it was a ripoff and they just wanted to show me. So sometimes I'm actually impressed by the clever marketing used to sell complete and total nonsense like weight loss sunglasses. One of the craftiest scams that I had ever seen was the promotion of the WLRBB. The ad that promoted this, it didn't promote the WLRBB, and in fact, not outwardly. Really, it was an ad for getting some weight loss pills. But here was the promise. If you get a recurring subscription to the weight loss pills, and you would get your first month free. The way it was worded was, you get your first month free, and if you get a recurring subscription to this product that's going to help you lose weight, you will also get this incredible product that they can't reveal what it is, the WLRBB, a proven secret used only by psychologists and hypnotists. And they would say, through this exclusive arrangement, you can get one without a prescription. Now, they didn't tell you that nobody ever needed a prescription for this product. So, you know, it's crafty. It's clever from a marketing standpoint. It's evil and deceptive from a moral and ethical standpoint. But when you look at the ad, you have to just for a moment go, these guys were smart and these guys were pretty tricky. When you order your pills that are really just caffeine combined with some diuretic herbs like dandelion, you check a little box. And the box says you're going to subscribe every month. You'll be billed $32. But because you are doing this, you're going to get the WLRBB, and you promise to use this product only for your own weight loss, and you will not resell it or prescribe it unless you are a licensed psychotherapist with a specialty in weight loss. Now, I found out what the WLRBB is. It stands for Weight Loss Refrigerator Blue Bulb. It's a light bulb. It's a blue light bulb that they tell you, you replace your refrigerator bulb with it, and when you're hungry, you open your refrigerator, and it emits an infraspectrum aura that affects the appetite center of the brain. I want to go to the homes of everybody who got this and shake them and go, it's a light bulb. It's just a blue light bulb, and it probably cost the company that sold it to you 4 cents. And it created an automatic billing of $32 a month on your credit card. So that in the process, you can get addicted to speedy diuretics that make you pee but haven't any long-term weight loss benefit. These are people who know they're ripping people off. And there's a combination out there. There are the good guys just doing business. There are the real deceptive criminals. And then there are people who say, you know what? We're opportunists. We're going to do this for as long as we can ride it out. Regardless of what goes on in the mind of the sellers, we have to acknowledge that there is big business in selling fitness and weight loss, and we, the personal trainers, we haven't a prayer of stopping it. There's no way. We can't. It's too big. There's too much money being made. We know many truths, and we want to inform our clients of the ripoffs and the scams, but weight loss, as I pointed out today on the call, escalated from a $33 billion industry. I know that number because when I first started doing seminars, I had the statistics and I had a chart, and I showed, and at the time, that was a huge number. Weight loss accounted for $33 billion in American spending per annum, per year. That was in 1989. Now, that same industry has escalated to over $150 billion. We're not just talking about people who are selling little pills and capsules in the magazines. We're also talking about the drug companies, the food companies, beverage manufacturers, direct marketing companies, e-commerce firms, and the medical community. Then we have us, trainers. What does the consumer marketplace think of when they think of trainers? They think we're expensive. They think they're going to have to commit, which they will. They think they're going to have to work hard. And if they have any idea of what's really going on in our field, they may know that many trainers who believe they're competent are not. Many of the certification agencies never even measure competence, although they promise to. And many trainers haven't any professional skills, nor do they have the ability to deal with the psychological and nutritional issues that plague most people looking to get fit. So, if you look at the marketplace Forgetting about your clients, just look at the marketplace. We have to realize what we're up against. It's massive. And we cannot villainize everyone and believe that somehow justice will prevail, that we're just going to say, we'll be nice, we'll sit back, and we'll just let some sheriff show up and arrest all the bad people selling all the junk. That's not going to happen. We have to accept responsibility. And you've heard me use that term not just a few times. I'm not going to stop. It must be important if I keep talking about it. Staying with the concept of wild, unfathomable numbers like $150 billion, I just had a meeting with somebody who represents a web-based seller of nutritional products, and I found out that at their website, they get 225,000 unique visitors a day. 225,000! That's unbelievable to me, and that's in a day. So we cannot even attempt to penetrate that marketplace. However, if we don't attempt it, if we just stay within our existing client base and stay with our repetitive habits that we've developed, then we stay stuck. So all of those people and entities and companies that make you angry, they'll keep making you angry, but if you don't do something, you'll be angry and you won't be any better off financially. So you've got to do something. Here's the really good news. You don't need to reach 225,000 people a day. You don't need to spend $150 billion. In fact, if you speak to five people a day about what you do, five people a day, that's 1,000 people a year. It's more than that. And it's the most foundational and transitional element of learning to market effectively as a personal trainer. That's it. Five a day. Everyone who has gone through my Be Better program and then progressed into my Beyond Better group will tell you that speaking to five people a day is effortless. Effortless. Now, is there energy output? You know there is, but they don't feel that. More importantly, it guarantees they never face a client shortage. Never. Every single day, they're meeting new prospective clients. Every single one of them has found a way to market effortlessly. And what's really cool is every single one of them struggled with the concept when it was first presented. They said, five a day? I can't talk to five people a day. Where am I going to find them? What am I going to say? What if they don't want to talk to me? Now, it's effortless. You should all recognize that speaking to five people a day about what you do is the most powerful step you can take in eliminating the sense that you need some effective marketing program. That's all you need to do. Five a day. That's your marketing. Period. Now today, I'm not going to ask you to speak to five people. I'm going to ask you to speak to one and then to jump right from one to 20. And that's one of the two directives I'm going to leave you with today. So we'll get to that directive in just a minute. First, I want to make three important points and then I'll give you two directives, one being the one that I just alluded to. The first point is this. If you're stuck anywhere professionally, you are facing and dealing with fear. Fear is a word that, as you by now know, I like to position as an acronym. False evidence appearing real. Because if you were uncomfortable, if you were afraid to ask your clients to pay you $4 more, $4 more per session, in your head you decided that they would get upset or they would quit training with you or there would be some negative outcome. And that's why your heart rate speeds up when you're thinking about it. When you actually do it, you get all nervous and all jittery and your mouth gets dry and you say, is it okay if, you know, with the economy? And you kind of stutter and you stammer. Finally, they go, well, what is it that you want? And you go, I'm raising my rates by $4. And they go, okay, now can we get on with the workout? And you're stunned. But you shouldn't be, because there was no reason to think that there would be a negative outcome. Now, your brain or a part of your brain wanted to protect you from hurt, from danger. So whenever you are going to face something uncharacteristic, that part of your brain creates fear. It gives you false evidence. So what you have to learn to do is counter it. False evidence appearing real. When your brain or your mind try to hold you back and you decide for some reason that what you're about to try is going to have a negative outcome, you have to ask yourself, based on what evidence? Why am I believing that it's going to cause me some harm? And if the answer is based on no evidence, you're facing an irrational fear, challenge it and squash it. So the first point is, if you're stuck, you're facing fear. Know that, challenge it and overcome it. The second point connects the day two directives and the development of effortless prosperity. The day two directives for many of you were challenging. much as getting 15 reps with an 80-pound barbell was for me when I was 15 years old. The directives throughout the remainder of the 8 days will continue to test and challenge you, and they have to. If they didn't, they'd be impotent. But know this, if you follow through on everything that I throw your way, a few days from now, when you look back at the directives from day two, you will laugh at them. You'll say, how could those have even been a struggle? They're effortless. So the first point, false evidence appearing real. The second point, with time and greater challenge, it will all start to feel effortless. And the third point involves being armed for influence. I mentioned on day one that one of the three primary challenges that limit trainers is this. They fail to recognize the power they have to influence. If you now understand that the marketplace is confused, misled, and overwhelmed, you realize more than ever how valuable you can be to a confused, misled individual with a fitness or weight loss need. The problem is, while you realize how valuable you can be, they don't. They legitimately don't. They don't know Martin Joseph's pills or surgical bypass or a synthetic leptin drug or a diuretic pill sold with a blue light bulb are not going to offer long-term health solutions. You know it, but they don't know it. They don't know they need to be educated and empowered. So if you say, hey, here I am and I'm going to educate you and empower you, they're going to say, go away. I don't want to be educated. I don't want to be empowered. I simply want to lose weight. I'm going to go get a pill. They believe that most of the options, whether or not you know them to be legitimate, are more appealing than an ongoing commitment with a personal trainer. Remember what I told you about changing outcomes. If you want to change an outcome, you have to change an emotion or a belief. So if you want to effectively drive people toward connecting with you, you have to be able and willing to change their beliefs about their present options. I'll say that one more time so it sinks in deep. If you want to effectively drive people toward connecting with you, you have to be able and willing to change their beliefs about their present options. Here's your first directive. Somewhere in your present circle, you know someone who has direct access to 20 people or more. Now, this may or may not be the same person who you selected earlier this week as your most influential client. If it is, I'd suggest you expand your thinking. Think of someone else you know. It doesn't have to be a client. Just someone you know, ideally someone you know well, who has direct access to at least 20 people. When I suggest that, most people start to think, well, who do I know who owns a company? It doesn't have to be an owner of a company. It can, but it doesn't have to be. It can also be a receptionist who works for that company if there are 20 employees, or even if there are 20 regular customers. Someone who has direct access to 20 people. It can be someone who travels to other people's homes to perform a service, like a mobile dog groomer, or a car detailer who has 20 regular customers, or somebody who gives swim lessons at people's homes. It can be someone who is a part of a busy mommy and me class, or someone who sits in the waiting area with 20 other parents while her child takes karate class, or while her child exercises at a My Gym franchise. Anyone who has direct access to 20 people. It can be the mayor, if you happen to know the mayor. It can be the principal of a school. It can be a coach, a doctor, the appointment setter at a nail salon, the checkout person at the grocery store. It can be the customer service agent at Home Depot. Just think about the people you know. Who has direct access to 20 people? The manager of a restaurant, your child's pediatrician, the security guard at a high-end office park, your lawyer, a business-to-business office supply person, a member of the Chamber of Commerce. Anyone you know who has direct access to 20 people will do the trick here. It can be an organizer of any annual charity event, or a hotel conference director, or a member of any community group. And I promise you, I can keep going. That was a very short list just to get you thinking. So unless you live in a rabbit hole, unless you live underground, or unless you're stuck somewhere up in space in the space station with limited contact, I promise you know someone who has direct access to 20 people. The directive is as follows. Talk to that person and establish for no later than the end of next week, establish contact through that individual with 20 people. So maybe you will get 20 email addresses, and the person who you know will tell those people to expect an email from you and will relay to them the importance of reading the email and responding. Or maybe you'll get 20 individual telephone numbers, and your contact will tell these people that you're going to call. Or maybe it can be an opportunity for you to speak in front of all 20 for anywhere from 5 to 50 minutes. And it doesn't even have to be a formal seminar. Maybe it's more of a social gathering where you'll have 5 minutes to present and then an hour or so to mingle. Anyone you know who has access to 20 people can help you pull this off. Maybe you'll set up a table at an event or a store, and people will approach you as there's an opportunity to approach. And this person, this contact, will tell the 20 people to approach. They will introduce you to all 20. The idea is you're exposed to 20 people who know you exist and know what you do for a living. That brings us to the second directive. Everyone you speak to about what you do for a living will ask a question. Now, they won't ask it out loud, nor will they even know in many cases that they're asking the question. But I assure you, somewhere in the gray matter that lies between their ears, the question shows up and stimulates interest in a response. If that response never arrives, you will fail to compel that person. If the response arrives from you and is modestly compelling, you will attract that person. If the response is right on the money, you influence that person. Here's the question they're asking. Why are you a better option for me than anything else I might consider? Why are you, the personal trainer who's talking to me, a better option for me than anything else I might consider? Now let's think about the thought process. In Be Better, I teach people about human response by sharing some insights provided by the great philosopher Plato. And Plato said, the human mind is like a chariot pulled by two horses. One, the small, frail, but intelligent horse of rational thought. The other, the large, powerful, playful, excitable horse named emotion. In order to evoke interest, we may have to speak to rational thought. But in order to influence someone to act, we have to impact the powerful horse, emotion. So the second directive is to come up with a definitive answer to the question, why are you the best option? It sounds easy, but remember, as every directive, at first, it will surprise you with how challenging it is. Eventually, it will become effortless, but right now, when you actually put your mind to it, you might find it's a little tougher than you think. You'll say, I'm the best option because I really deliver results, right? That's usually where trainers start. And I'm going to tell you, that's not a good one. It may be true. You may really deliver results. But remember, most people who you talk to are operating with some false beliefs. And Nutrisystems and Jenny Craig and Hydroxycut and Body Wraps, they also promise that they deliver results. So you have to try to come up with a few sentences that make sense to rational thought and that compel emotion. Now, I can't tell you how to answer the question, but I can tell you this. Unless you learn to answer the question, your marketability is limited. If you can articulate why you're a better option than anything else they're exposed to or considering, you get a client. It's that simple. So directive one, connect with someone you know who can put you in front of or in contact with 20 qualified people and set up a mechanism of communicating with all of them. In person is better than telephone. Telephone is better than email, and however you reach them, you want to quickly create the in-person face-to-face conversation. So the email may prompt them to then follow up with a face-to-face meeting. Directive two, answer the question, why are you the best option? Don't walk away from this directive. Don't allow but or can't to defeat you. Don't let your ego go, I know how to answer this. I don't have to waste the time. Don't let fear hold you back, and don't take it lightly. Once you handle this directive, you will find that your ability to turn conversations into clients takes on a new life, one that almost feels magical and definitely feels effortless. Right now, just move forward. Move forward with all the force you can muster, and with time, that force will feel effortless, as will the emotional and financial return that follows. It's a simple process of holding on to those two words, be better.